Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA. On today's show, we'll talk about if Carmelo Anthony can help the Rockets and if this is a risk worth taking.
Then we'll discuss some of the more overrated free agent signings of the summer and what the Mavericks can expect from Dirk Nowitzki in his 21st season. It's Locked On NBA. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
Are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for The Step Back. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the league at large for SB Nation and Fansided. You can follow me in my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
We'll discuss some of the most overrated free agent signings of the summer before talking about Dirk Nowitzki re-signing with the Mavericks, but let's start with the latest involving Carmelo Anthony, who was traded by the Thunder to the Hawks last week, and according to Mark Stein of the New York Times, Carmelo plans to join the Houston Rockets after he's bought out by the Hawks and clears waivers in the next few days. He'll sign a one-year, $2.4 million deal to team up with his friend Chris Paul, reunite with his former head coach Mike D'Antoni, a relationship that could be best described as rocky during their brief stint together with the Knicks. Obviously, this is a good situation for Melo. He'll get paid after the buyout, get to play with his banana boat buddy Chris Paul, get to play with the reigning MVP James Harden, and go to possibly the second-best team in the NBA. But is this a good situation for the Rockets, David?
Well, that's a debate, isn't it? It seems like it could go on either side, and I've seen plenty of people talking about whether or not it's a good fit, whether or not it's a bad fit. I think there's a lot of remembering the player that Carmelo once was as opposed to the player that he currently is, and considering that he could go in there and add a much-needed scoring punch to a team like Houston that lost a number of key players in free agency. So from my perspective, I just don't see that the fit makes much of a difference. I don't think he's going to be able to fit alongside Chris Paul and James Harden nearly as well as some of the more positive-thinking people tend to consider. I don't think it's going to be as disastrous either, but I just don't see that he's going to be able to fit alongside them well. It looked very shaky for most of the season in Oklahoma City. There were good moments. Mostly there were just moments where he didn't live up to the potential that a lot of people expected him to live up to. His defense is still as porous as ever. He's not nearly as athletic as he once was, and even that was never particularly athletic. So he's going to a team that is expected to score in bunches. Obviously, you've got some potent offense there with James Harden, but you lose depth there, so you wonder whether or not Melo's going to be able to make up for that. I just don't see it, to be honest with you. I don't think he's going to be able to provide that scoring punch. He's going to be more ISO-heavy, another ISO-heavy player in addition to Harden and Paul. Learning how to share that ball was a difficult thing for Carmelo early in his career. It was last season in Oklahoma City. To me, it still feels like it's a bad fit. I don't see it. What about you?
It smells a lot like that Thunder situation, doesn't it? I mean, they're going to ask him to play the same position. They're going to ask him to play, to go be Olympic Melo at that stretch four spot. I'll say this. When he was doing it with the Thunder, he was playing along two all-star players, Russell Westbrook and Paul George. Now, Paul George was essentially a catch-and-shoot guy for the Thunder last year. He's never been a creator like Westbrook or like Harden or like Chris Paul. And Westbrook isn't the creator that James Harden and Chris Paul is. He's not as creative as a passer, not nearly as creative of a passer. Yes, he racks up the assists, but it's essentially through the same sort of drive and kick situation. It's because his usage is so high, to be honest. And I wonder if Carmelo Anthony will, by playing next to really creative facilitators like Chris Paul and James Harden, if he'll be able to play that Olympic Melo role better. If this is a better version of the Thunder last year, and if it is, if he'll be better in that situation. And if he is better in that situation, what does that look like? Does that just look like a pick and pop kind of guy? A guy who just stretches the floor, drains some corner threes? I don't love the fit. I'm just trying to find what the positives are, and I think it's a better fit than it was with Oklahoma City, but I don't like the situation for Houston, because this was a team right on the precipice of challenge. Like, this was a team with a 3-2 lead over the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. Mm-hmm. And they lose Trevor Ariza, they lose Luka Mbamute. And it kind of feels like, yeah, they weren't ready to pay those guys the amount of money that they made in free agency. They ended up getting a guy like James Ennis, who was a fine, role player level replacement. And it just sort of feels like the Carmelo Anthony thing is just trying to, like, you know, puzzle together something and cobble together something that resembles the contender that they had last year. But Melo does not give you what they need defensively. He doesn't give you really... I don't see what he gives you outside of what Ryan Anderson is already providing with that team. And if you're going to start Ryan Anderson and Carmelo Anthony now, I don't know where the defense comes from. It just seems like the Rockets are walking back a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Like they are more resembling what they were 2 years ago, a very limited team pre-Chris Paul that was basically James Harden or bust and didn't play a whole lot of defense. They're closer to that than what they were last year, because of the players that they lost and who they replaced them with.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that Houston took a step back. I think even the biggest Rockets fans would argue that that's the case. I think they're to where this there. Look, Houston was probably never going to unseat the Warriors. I think a lot of people look at that 3-2 lead and consider that maybe they really had a legitimate chance at unseating the Golden State Warriors. I don't think so. I think it was just a matter of the Warriors realizing that their backs were finally, after four seasons, had their backs against the wall and were able to flip that switch in order to knock off the Rockets.
And they got Andre Iguodala back.
Yeah, that certainly helps. And they lost, Houston lost Chris Paul to injury too. Right. So, Houston, I just don't see them being a legitimate contender anymore, to be honest with you. And I think a lot of people are looking at them as being able to duplicate what they did last year. It's probably not going to happen. Let's assume Clint Capella has another level to reach if he's re-signed. At this point, he still hasn't, although the two sides are negotiating a deal. He's going to have to improve his game. I spoke to John Lucas III about John Lucas II about Clint Capella, and he told me that there's a lot more that he can provide at some point. He just hasn't been able to do so because of Harden and Paul. But that's going to be needed for him. But I wonder if Carmelo's addition might put Capella into a more limited role than what he had last year. So,
it's a good point.
I think a lot of people assume that Houston is this, this team that either shoots threes or drives to the rim constantly, but they did shoot a lot more mid-range shots than people expect them to. And I think in that sense, piggybacking on what you said about, shot creators like Chris Paul and James Harden, Melo's going to get more shots in that 18 to 20 range where he's most comfortable. So he can create offense. He'll be able to catch and shoot there at the wing. I could see him putting up some decent points there. The problems are defensively, though, and I wonder if that's going to be enough. This team could score 120 points per game, but they might give up 125.
And when the Warriors are scoring 120 points per game and still being one of the top 10, top 5 defenses in the league, you have a hard time unseating them. It confuses. I get that you're able to sign Melo for basically the minimum here, and I understand that there's a value play to that, right? You're not signing Melo to $25 million like he was making with the Thunder last year, but so in that respect, it's a better value. But then wasn't this new owner in Houston supposed to be willing to pay this team, and he ends up letting Trevor Ariza and Luke Mbah Moute walk? It's a real tough step back,
and rightfully so. But here's the thing, too. Yeah. Are we supposed to assume that the relationship with D'Antoni, who's different, more mature, and that Carmelo, older, has smoothed over? Are they going to be able to be on the same page as far as what the vision for this team is concerned? Is he going to be able to appreciate what D'Antoni's teachings are in a way he wasn't able to do
so? Well, it seems like D'Antoni has come back from that. I mean, he wasn't willing to play the ISO ball in New York when Melo was the ISO specialist, but he, adopted James Harden and decided that he was going to play that ISO ball with James Harden, just because I think Harden's shot creating ability and unselfishness is just so much is levels higher than Carmelo. But if D'Antoni's playing, look, that's the one thing that I actually do think is not going to be as much of an issue is the D'Antoni Carmelo thing. I think they're going to put their personal beef behind, if there is any, right? They're both professional.
It's been overstated, tension, but it's probably been overstated.
Exactly. And at this point, this is an ISO team. The Rockets are an ISO team, and Carmelo Anthony fits there. I don't think they need any help on offense is what I'm saying. They needed help defensively, and that's Melo's not going to help that.
Is the addition of Melo also a way of kind of making up for the loss or the failure to acquire LeBron James? I mean, Houston had big, lofty goals of being able to make a move for LeBron, ones that were probably pretty limited to begin with, but it would have required him to opt in with the Cleveland Cavaliers and then be traded for a number of assets to Houston. So the expectation is that Daryl Morey would have been able to figure out some way of dealing with the Cavaliers in order to acquire LeBron James, but obviously never really panned out, is just kind of saying to their fans, well, look, we got a big name anyway, another big name for the 2003 draft class.
To that point, I mean, you lose out on LeBron, Trevor Ariza walks, Luka Mbamute you let go, and James Ennis as a replacement is not going to cut it. They had to do something.
You forgot Michael Carter-Williams, too.
True, yeah. That's, you know.
That's the game changer right there.
They're looking good. They're looking good. All right, well, last week we talked about our most underrated free agent signings of the summer. Next up, we'll go through our most overrated free agent signings. But first, things in the NBA can change every day. That means you need a daily podcast to break down everything that's happening around the league. And there's no better place to get it than Locked On NBA. So make sure to subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. We'll talk about Dirk Nowitzki re-upping with the Mavericks later on, but let's turn to some other free agency moves. Last week, we discussed the most underrated signings of the summer. Today, we're talking about our most overrated signings. David, who's your most overrated signing so far, free agent of the summer?
I don't know that it's easy to pick just one, to be honest with you. I mean, I think you look at what it means to be overrated, and it's hard to say, obviously, as they've just signed with their teams. It could be, as underrated, you could expect them to make impacts. As overrated, you don't expect them to be able to make the impact of what they're getting paid for. So they're probably going to get paid too much, or the expectations of that team and their signings are probably too much. And so I looked at a number of players. I think one that's probably flown someone under the radar, but still probably overrated, Dwight Howard in Washington. I think that's a lot of people see the name. It's obviously a name that's well recognized and it's accomplished, a probable Hall of Famer. Although I know there have been some arguments across Twitter as to whether or not he's a deserving candidate for the Basketball Hall of Fame. But let's put that aside for now and say he's probably not going to make an impact on a team like Washington that is probably desperate to not just make the playoffs, but to be able to go a little bit deeper than a first round exit as they did last season. Obviously, they're likely to be a little bit healthier with John Wall there. Bradley Beal still playing at an all-star level, but they acquired Austin Rivers from the Clippers. He helps, but I don't know that Howard does. I look at him and his impact. I can't see him being an impactful player in 2018. He's put up some decent numbers that are probably, again, overstated as far as what their realistic impact is. And there's the real problem that Howard just has no idea what kind of a player or person he is, and then he just rubs people the wrong way. He's probably not as smart as he thinks he is. He's probably not as likable as he thinks he is. And for a locker room that has so many chemistry issues, well reported, I think he just goes in there like a ball of kerosene and an already raging fire. So I do not like the Dwight Howard addition in Washington. I understand that they had to make a move. There's probably one they could have made that was better, but that's not it.
They went for splashiness, right? And John Wall at the end of the year talked about how they needed to get some more shot creation off the bench and more scoring off the bench and how they needed to find some more athleticism at center. I don't know what Dwight Howard the Wizards think that they're getting, but this is basically a guy who can rebound, put up a few big nights here and there, but I don't see what he provides.
And big is relative, right? It's not like it's 30-point games or anything like this.
Exactly. And look, I actually, as far as the Wizards go, I like what they did with Austin Rivers. I thought that was a smart acquisition by them. I think he really helps that bench on both ends of the floor. But the Dwight Howard thing just, it doesn't smell right. I don't like it. I think you're right. It's already a tense situation that can combust at any moment in Washington. There's been trade rumors surrounding John Wall for a couple of years, and there's been issues around that locker room for a couple of years, and Dwight Howard is not going to help that. But for me, my most overrated free agent signing is a different center, DeAndre Jordan in Dallas. Look, 30 years old, signed a one-year, $23 million deal. Dallas is rebuilding, and I don't really know what I like DeAndre Jordan as a player. I think he's a really good center, and he makes a lot of sense. He doesn't make the defensive impact that he did. He's not the lob threat he once was, but he's still an above average to very good center. And it just seems like this is for Dallas. It's just like a couple of years too late. They kind of were supposed to have him, and they didn't get him, and now they're kind of just making up for old times. I don't know. It just seems weird. If you're a team that's rebuilding, why sign a 30-year-old center on a one-year deal at $23 million? It just – I felt like I don't mind – like the fit makes sense. I just It would have made more sense if you sign him for a 2 or 3 year deal, and at least you solve your center problem for the next couple of years. But I don't even know what your plan is at center beyond this season. I thought that there was an opportunity cost. I know he wasn't available at the time they signed DeAndre Jordan, but what if they had waited out and gotten Julius Randle? I mean, that he fits that team so much better than DeAndre Jordan, and the, you know, his age versus Dennis Smith Jr. And Luka Doncic, or even like a Kevon Looney who from Golden State who was out there and available. And both of them could have been had for cheaper than DeAndre Jordan. I just think that based on the amount you're paying him, the shortness of the contract, I don't really see the point of it. It just seems for making up for lost time.
Well, I think you're right about them trying to reclaim some of the quote-unquote magic from a few seasons ago when they lost him, or he opted to re-sign him with the Clippers.
Yeah,
I think they had the money to throw at DeAndre, and I think it kind of made sense to just go ahead and do so. They're not going to contend this year. We'll talk about the Mavs a little bit more in our next segment, but I think Jordan's fit works in Dallas. He's, again, not the player that he once was, but it works. He can provide some leadership there. He's a very consistent player. Like, he missed the first games last year due to injury that he has in several seasons. So a consistent player, he can provide some kind of guidance for the younger players like Luka Doncic and Dennis Smith Jr., as you talked about, Harrison Barnes, you know, guys that are still kind of growing as far as what their roles are concerned. But I think to your point about the one-year deal, he comes off the books. Let's say Dirk Nowitzki probably retires at the end of the season.
Right.
Next thing you know, you've got more cap space than you expected. I don't know. I think Barnes still has one more year left, right? I'm not sure if it's a player option or not.
I think it's two.
Okay. But then you can re-sign, say, Boogie Cousins, who's on a one-year deal with the Golden State Warriors.
I mean, yeah, maybe.
Maybe
I mean,
that's the play.
It makes sense. I get that they want to be free agent players, but I also, you know, why go sign Boogie Cousins if you've got Doncic and Dennis Smith Jr. there? I felt like they should have went young at that position and just start putting together what this roster is going to be, because I don't know what this front court's going to look like after Dirk retires and after DeAndre Jordan comes off the books. I thought that they could have done a better job of just trying to figure out what that front court of the future is going to look like.
That's especially the whole thing, though. With Dirk still on the roster, you're never going to get a clear vision of what that front court is going to be like. So you might as well just kind of go and say, you know what, maybe we can push for a lower playoff seed this year and make it fun, make it interesting.
I like DeAndre Jordan as a player. It's just the fit's weird to me. Kyle Anderson.
That's
one of my other overrated signings. On a 4-year, $37 million deal, he's going to be making $8.6 million this year. It's going to go up from there to about $9.5 million. 24 years old, nice kind of bench niche player for the Spurs over the first 4 years of his career. I don't know exactly what Memphis plans to get out of Kyle. I like Kyle Anderson. Like, I just he doesn't do anything well, but he just does a bunch of different things. He's an efficient enough shooter. He's not a prolific three-point shooter. He's not very good from the free throw line or getting to the line. He's a fine rebounder, but not great. He is a willing passer, but he's not a shot creator. He's good enough defensively, but I don't know if he's got the speed to stay in front of the better, you know, forwards and wing players in the league. He's kind of like limited to that stretch four role, which I guess he could play, but I don't know. If Memphis is trying to get back to that grit and grind, I guess he kind of fits it, the mold, like, just because he's slow, but I don't know that he's necessarily skilled enough. Like, that seemed like a weird fit to me, and I think the assumption is that
Conley and Gasol are going to return back to full health, and if that's the case, then his role will be more limited and more specified, in that he just has to do, you know, the little things that maybe Conley and Gasol can't, and I think in that case, because he can do a lot, even if he doesn't do any of it particularly well, kind of fits in alongside
the $9 million. It's $9 million a year for a glue.
It seems expensive. Yeah, it does seem expensive. I'll bring you a hot take as far as another overrated free agent signing. I've got Paul George as one of the more free agent signings. I just don't know why the hell you throw that kind of money at George. Look, I know that off the court, the impact of being able to tell the fans in Oklahoma City, the ones that fill the Chesapeake Energy Arena, that Paul George re-signed, you know, a couple years after Russell Westbrook signed his extension and a couple years after Kevin Durant left them coldly for Golden State, we're able to lure another all-star superstar free agent in Paul George. Perhaps their first, somebody that wasn't drafted by the team and chose to come to Oklahoma City. So from that point, I understand the impact. But people are talking like this is a legitimate contender, and they're never going to be a legitimate contender. They're never going to knock off the Golden State Warriors. They're not even, they may not even be a top three team in the Western Conference. I think Los Angeles is probably the Lakers, that is. It's probably holding, you know, court this season. I think they're not really seeing themselves a legitimate contender until their young players continue to grow. I don't see them as being a real threat to the title there. But as far as Oklahoma City is concerned, they got Paul George. He's a fine player, very good. But at the same time, I don't know that he's necessarily the superstar caliber.
But what were they supposed to do though? I mean, if he didn't go to LA, they traded everything away from him.
I get it. It's one of those moves though. Like, again, as you just said, what are you supposed to do? It reminds me of like what Miami did with Hassan Whiteside a couple of years ago. It's like, what are we supposed to do? Just let him walk away and get nothing in return?
Yeah, they were supposed to do that. But Paul George, his game's going to age better than Whiteside's, I think.
Oh, sure. I mean, that's not saying much, but at the same time, it's just, you're a team that has a limited ceiling. You're never going to.
Do you think there's an addition by subtraction by getting rid of Carmelo Anthony and kind of really leaning into Paul George and Westbrook as your leaders?
I just don't see. I don't see a Westbrook capable of doing that unless he's. Yeah. He's never going to change. He really is who he is. I love Westbrook because he's a lot of fun. But if I had to follow that team religiously, it would pain me to do so because I just don't see him being able to. Like, he was able to defer to Kevin Durant, and even that was a strained relationship, one that probably drove Durant out of Oklahoma City in the first place. I just don't see him being able to acquiesce any of the control over the team. That's where he does best. He wants to be a player that's singularly great, that controls single-handedly the destiny of his team and goes to a very limited place in the playoffs. And Paul George chose to fit alongside that for whatever reason. I just don't see how it's going to make much of an impact.
I'm surprised he didn't go to LA. That was weird. But hey, Oklahoma City, good sushi apparently. Dirk is re-signed with the Mavericks. We'll discuss what his role next season will be after this. But first, in addition to the daily Locked On NBA show, the Locked On Podcast Network has a daily show for every NBA team. So go to iTunes or your favorite podcasting app and search for your city, then subscribe to get daily updates on your favorite team. The Locked On Podcast Network, the local experts on the biggest stories. It comes as no surprise that Dirk Nowitzki has re-signed with the Dallas Mavericks. He has agreed to a one-year deal for $5 million and will return for his 21st season with the Mavs. This all seems like a formality, David, but there are questions about what sort of role Dirk will have next season. After playing a lot of center next to Harrison Barnes last year, the Mavericks signed DeAndre Jordan, which will likely push Dirk back to the four, but that creates a bunch of other lineup questions. Do you see Dirk's role? How do you see Dirk's role playing out next season? He'll be a starter at the very least, right?
Yeah, but he could be a starter that plays a limited number of minutes, and I think those minutes are going to continue to wane. I think he'll go in there and do what Dirk's done for the past 20 seasons, and I think it gives him another opportunity to write his own story, write the ending to his NBA story the way he sees fit. I think, obviously, the Mavericks think he deserves it. Most NBA fans think he deserves it. And I think along with guys like Manu Ginobili and possibly Dwayne Wade, should those two re-sign with their respective teams, I think Nowitzki has as much right as any player in the league to say, this is how I want to play my last season. I can choose to do so, again, potentially competing for a playoff spot, making these games more interesting. You know, he's not going to be as effective a player as he once was, and no one expects him to be so, but he can kind of go in there, help provide some vocal leadership on the floor, help keep things loose in that locker room where he's as respected as any player around the league, and still, you know, provide some occasional scoring. At the four, the defensive issues are concerning, so you have to expect that DeAndre will fill a bigger role in that aspect. But again, you can start him, have him play 5 minutes where then he goes off and back to the bench, comes in again in the second quarter where you shift that lineup and maybe move Barnes up to the four, see how he plays alongside DeAndre, and kind of take it from there where he maybe averages 15 to 20 minutes at the most per game.
I think that's about right. Probably you start Dirk for the first six-ish minutes, right, you know, of the half, and then you kind of bring in maybe like a Wesley Matthews who takes a six-man role, move Barnes from the three over to the stretch four, which he's a better fit at next to DeAndre Jordan. That makes sense to me. And maybe, you know, at the end of game, he didn't play a whole lot at the end of games last season, so
didn't have to. They weren't playing for anything, so
right, they weren't trying to win games either. So maybe if he's got the hot hand or whatever, if he's having a particularly good night, you play him at the end of games. If not, you have some other lineups that you can go to. I think the big thing there is if you get him for one more year, you at least get him for Luka Doncic's first season.
Yeah.
And he plays that mentor leadership role for him, especially as a former European player coming over the States. I mean, I think that could be a huge thing for Luka. It's a great story. I like the fit. It makes sense. I think he's got enough there that he could contribute. But if you're the Mavericks, you don't necessarily have to rely on him. I think their starting five is probably Dennis Smith Jr., Luka Doncic, Harrison Barnes, Dirk Nowitzki, DeAndre Jordan, with like Wes Matthews coming off the bench as your primary sixth man.
Yeah.
But Dirk's kind of like, you know, a starter by name, comes off the floor after 5 or 6 minutes, you know, after the first break, and Wes Matthews goes in and that's sort of your more rejiggered starting unit. But
he's an extra outlet for Doncic and Dennis Smith Jr. when they create plays. I mean, he's a guy who's a knockdown shooter, you know, and so he's not going to be very mobile, but having those two guys be able to drive to the rim and then find one of the surest shooters in NBA history somewhere on the elbow is probably going to help them as far as being, you know, more comfortable and finding out their roles as respective playmakers on that team. So it kind of makes sense. You have another option there because you've got Nowitzki who can shoot it from the perimeter. You've got DeAndre rolling to the rim. You've got some nice pieces there. You know, obviously, Harrison Barnes can light it up from outside as well. I'm curious to see how it goes. And you know what? Again, even if it's just a way for him to write his own ending and to have the year-long going away party, I think he's as deserving as anybody. And you know, Kobe got a chance to do it. Why not Dirk?
And that's how we're going to end this show, too. So that's all we have for today. You can subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. We'll be back here next Tuesday. You can find us on Locked On Heat in the meantime. Thank you for listening. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.